two of the members of Fury and Solace have joined the Antidote. It's good to have you here.
Good to be here.
Yeah, thank you for having us, man.
Thank you.
And now it's introduction time. You got to tell us who you are and what your role is in the band and who we're missing.
Well, my name is Andrew. I'm one half of the rhythm section back there on the drums. And who is missing is Jeremiah. He is one of the guitarists. He is the latest member. And then Bevan is the other guitarist. Whenever I introduce him to anybody, I always call him the mastermind behind this project. He pretty much the one who initiated everything about Fury and Solace. Those are the two that are not present. Oh, Tyler Shipbinder.
Yeah, okay. The guy who does a lot of our poems.
Yeah.
He and Bevan started the project together. Bevan was doing guitar work and Tyler was doing poetry. And they did a bunch of things together on like GarageBand and things. And then, you know, we whittled away and helped him get the album together. But I'm Adam speaking, and I'm the other half of the instrument section or the percussion section on the bass guitar. It is fantastic. I'm new to the bass, but I freaking love it.
Oh, man.
It's so fun for me.
Genius. He picked it up like a natural, this guy.
Well, it's just a blast. I didn't want to write the drums, I'll tell you that. It's been happily ever after that.
That's right.
Well, Adam, you and I have met before. You're actually here for a return visit because you and Jeremiah were members of Spirit and the Bride. And
yes,
that
sir.
Band came for a talk in 2019. The difference between that band's sound and Fury and Solace is huge.
Yeah.
And Adam was a drummer in that band.
That's true. I was the drummer in that band. It's a good point. It's a very different sound. I don't mind that I play in different genres because it keeps me entertained a little bit. I think I can get a little bit bored in certain genres, but more importantly, I didn't have those guys to jam with anymore. My brother is still does music as much as he can, and he sings in his church and probably screams to tons of songs all the time in his car. But we couldn't really get a drummer thing worked out, and we just kind of fell apart during the 2019-2020 time. And our main guitar player, Josh, stopped playing with us, so that was really the biggest thing. When Fury and Solace came around, it was like Andy and I knew each other from years back playing with each other.
Oh,
and so
yeah, we gigged a lot together, man.
We did.
As drummers. Huh?
And Andy is like a few years older than me. So he treated me like a younger brother and was so, but a nice older brother. And actually like
that's a
mentor.
Rare thing.
Brought me along and answered all my questions. He let me do a drum off with him one time, and it was just the greatest thing in the world. And so it was a really cool reunion when we started jamming again.
But talking about the difference with Fury and Solace is that it's post-rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, versus that metal you guys were playing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were in a metal band too.
Oh,
we're both in unfamiliar territory.
Would you have called that metal?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I know. It was.
Corpus Christi over here.
Yeah, Corpus Christi. He was the drummer for Victory Records, yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah. We were, it was two albums on Victory Records. I was not part of the first one, but I wrote and recorded the second album, A Feast for Crows, on Victory Records. We toured with that album for a while and made a music video. And then I got married and I was like, well, I don't know about this touring thing. Kind of just my lady.
You've got to admit that it's got to be difficult to tell a story without vocals. So why did you take the post-rock route?
Wow, man.
Oh, man, yeah.
That's a good question.
That's a great question.
I think if I could speak for Bevan, we'll have to get some answers from him on that. I would assume that Bevan began writing music and it sort of took the post-rock route because it didn't have vocals. But he also had in his mind and his heart creatively for forever that he didn't want to automatically put vocals on something with what he created because he wanted people to be able to feel the emotions. You know, we say that a lot of our shows, you know, like, come talk to us if this makes you feel anything.
That's right.
And so it's kind of a blank slate. And so the movement of the music is there to help guide. I think Bevan's writing kind of fell towards that. And with the poems and stuff that he would add in with that, with Tyler, back in the day. And then as we started to kind of shape out the sound with the guitars and the drums and everything, it fell into that category of post-rock.
I agree with that. From my perspective, it seemed as though Russian Circles. I hear this name all the time.
Sure.
And Russian Circles is a huge influence, I would say, especially to Bevan. But anyway, I bring them up to say, when Bevan invited me to this project to put some drums over the stuff he had written, mutual friend of ours was recording Bevan. He was explaining it to me, like, it's this atmospheric rock. It's not a very riff heavy music at all. It more like creates an atmosphere of sound. And
did he say cinematic emotion to you that time?
I probably did. Probably, that sounds like a word he would use. Absolutely.
He's tried to say cinematic, and I think it's true.
But, you know, I listened to it. I listened to it when it was given to me. Yeah, there's so much room and space for me to do whatever I want on it. And so, like, I would put these crazy metal drum ideas on top of it. And all these dudes, they know the genre. I'd never heard of post-rock. I honestly had never heard of post-rock before Bevan.
Have you been living with your head in the sand?
No, he'd been smashing his head against metal walls for years.
And well, they're telling me, like, Andrew, we like what you're doing. It's too much, you know. Yeah. Cool it down, more simple. And I'm like, okay. Well, here's another shot. And they're like, yeah, that's we need that space. We need, you know, fills and stuff, syncopations, that kind of thing are in there. You know, we're trying to make it interesting, but I'm honestly still learning how to take a back seat and let the atmosphere take control and be a little bit less. I'm just trying to reduce the flash that I'm so used to bringing in. But anyway,
yeah. Well, and I'll tell you, post-rock a lot of times came from, Bevan also had a ton of influence from As Cities Burn and Under Oath and Sigur Rós. So most of Bevan's like guitar playing and skills kind of were channeled in those bands, like guitar riffs.
Mm.
And so and if you think about those bands and kind of meld them, you said you can see that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He does a lot of like the finger tapping and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you said you had a lot of space to just add whatever. And it's true. Yeah. Bevan pretty much wrote on his own parts that required other people. He said that was like a goal of his. He didn't want to play music on his own.
Yeah.
And he really wanted to play in community. And his first like thoughts of the band were like, I think I'll just kind of have some, you know, some people I just want to jam with here and there, you know, and he didn't want to like solidify it as a thing. And then we played some shows, we did the album and we're like, hey, you know, Bevan, if you want to be a band, we've got to start doing band decisions.
Yeah.
We're going to make this thing. That was like a thing for a minute.
It truly was
hard to make band decisions for a little while.
Well, because I mean, you know, like I said,
it was his project.
As the mastermind of this, of Fury and Solace, like he had specific vision. And so we were like, hey, by the way, there's three other perspectives.
Here. Yes. Yeah.
And that
especially when it includes our wallets. We have to pay money for things.
Yeah,
records and now two records in. And
I got to say, just one more thing, if you oblige me, the whole no vocal thing bothered me. Specifically, because especially having never considered post-rock, you know, in that genre or any band labeled post-rock, I'm like, no lyrics, really? You're really going to grab the people's attention constantly, you know, with no vocals, that kind of thing? I was skeptical about it. But as we kept recording, and now two albums deep, but the whole second album here, the journey of recording that, there have been multiple moments in the recording process where I have been grabbed so strongly with emotion, listening back to it and all that stuff. And I'm like, I'm enthralled.
So you guys were actually able to pull yourselves all together and come to the conclusion that you really did want to record By Endurance, the new album. And that's out now. A couple of months ago, The Antidote aired the song By Endurance, We Conquer. And I messaged you asking if this was an Ernest Shackleton reference.
Yes, sir.
And you told me that the song names and album concept were inspired by Shackleton. Mm-hmm. Question is, why Shackleton?
Dude, that was a long discussion. Bevan, again, he should be here. He did such a good job of feeling what we had all been going through just with all sorts of life circumstances. And that word endurance just kept coming up for him. And so he started just like searching it, I think, and found the whole endurance story. And Ernest Shackleton, he got the book, he read the book, he watched the documentaries. I mean, he sold it to us like crazy. And basically just by saying like, dudes, first off, just watch this. It's so inspiring as a man, as a father, just that whole struggle and their survival and getting through just pretty much the hardest circumstance of all.
As a team. That's a thing. And it, like he brought losing that no to the one. Band, like the bonds that have been created in this band through the music we write and play. I mean, like, we feel like that band of brothers, you know, like absolutely. That we could go through anything together. And I just think he came in with that mindset, like, guys, I found the most epic story from the early 1900s. That is exactly what we are. And like, this is an epic story. We have to.
And like a framework, you know, for the record.
Right.
And because like a lot of the songs really fit that too. Like, it's so weird because some of the songs are like 4 years old, 5 years old. You know, I remember writing.
Which one?
I wrote Lungs in 2021. Heights Above, you know, in like 2020.
Yeah, Heights Above. Been there for a while.
And so there were several of them that I had been working on. The album is very bass driven, but
at the helm too.
Yeah, and at the helm. So basically, we had all these songs. And they all had different names for the most part. But then when we wanted to do the theme of the record, Bevan is such a designer. He wanted it to be very cohesive. And we didn't want it to be too cheesy and take everything from Ernest Shackleton's story. But we wanted to kind of pin that as like, this is an unreal story. And the fact that it's true is even more crazy.
Yeah.
And then our songs kind of led to that storytelling a little bit, and we tried to shape it that way.
We got to explain who Ernest Shackleton is, because he was an Antarctic explorer whose ship was crushed in the ice in the Antarctic.
Right.
Didn't they paddle and sail like a lifeboat? It was at 800 miles or something like that to a tiny speck of an island.
They had to get away from where they were, so they basically forded with boats, one or two boats. I can't remember how many boats. It was like 28 men, I think. Mm-hmm. And and it was like 800 miles. And
while they all survived. While the other part of the team had to stay behind.
Well, that was later. So when they get to Elephant Island, then he and another dude go off on their journey to get help. But it takes them like 4 months.
Yeah, she's old Pete's man.
To explain to our listeners, you have to hunt out the book and read all about his story.
Yeah, the Endurance.
Yeah, and there's some good documentaries on it. Some of them are a little cheesy.
Disney. I think it's on Disney, the Endurance.
And the footage is really great. The footage is all, most of it's all fair use. And so we were able to use several of those things for the imagery and all that type of stuff.
There's a direct connection between the ship and two of your songs. And we've been talking about how they don't have vocals, but two of the tracks do. And that the first one is 68 degrees, 44 minutes, 21 seconds south, and 52 degrees, 19 minutes, 47 seconds west.
Yes, sir.
They have spoken word elements. And also actually relate to that's the location of Shackleton's ship after it was crushed by the ice.
That's correct.
That's right.
Yep. Tyler wrote that poem a long time ago.
Oh, even before the concert.
He did.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I did not know
that. But I know that that's all his work. And then the poem was split into two sections.
Yeah.
So we did the first section over that startup, and then the one in the middle.
What's crazy about the second, is it the 52 degree?
Mm-hmm.
The beat that is created in that track is literal like wood pieces that I banged against each other, like
graphite from my garage.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. And then his ring, there's like a very articulate knocking sound.
Yeah, the high pitch knock.
Yeah, and that is literally his wedding ring knocking against that wood. And there's just been a lot of relational stuff between all of us and our families and our wives. That speaks a lot to me, you know, within the story.
Yeah, truly. And we really stuck together and supported each other through everybody's stuff. Everybody had stuff and we were able to pull that album together.
Yeah. Man. And we were doing the heaves and hoes too.
Yes, we were.
Did all
that's
those.
Right. We did.
Yeah. And the waves are not waves. It was a jacket with a microphone, and we figured out how to make a wave sound. It was glorious. That was a fun one.
Well, 68 Degrees was the one that led off the album. That song says, "Exploration is inside us all. A man must press beyond his boundaries and make a habit of doing what has never been done before." So you guys were wanting to set the stage for your listeners.
Yeah.
So you didn't want it just running on emotion. You wanted to give them some direction to it.
Yeah. So the first record, all of the poems, they were telling a story of passing on to a son. There was this like message, and it was very encoded. Bevan has always been a fan of messaging that's been kind of like within something that makes the listener kind of search.
You're talking about the first album.
The first album. Yeah. So we were able to put, I think they had like 5 or 6 poems ready to go. Tyler and Bevan did, but we chose 3 back in the day. And they sort of carved out like this beginning, the road is the journey, and then kind of catesis is like that, you've arrived sort of thing. But it was still all kind of like mysterious, you know. They were trying to make the listener, you know, search for the meaning. And the poems were kind of hidden too. Some of them, they're kind of scratchy and you can't hear them very well. We wanted this one to be more clear, less in length, but also like put the concept of the album straightforward.
Yeah, direct.
Very direct. Yeah. But it was definitely a discussion because we didn't have those ready until, man, like maybe a month or less, 2 weeks before we were done and submitting to get it mixed and mastered. So it was a very fast process.
I do understand what the song was saying about pressing on beyond boundaries.
Yeah.
But really, if you think about boundaries, Fury and Solace is confined by its sound. So can't limitations keep you focused?
I think so. I think limitations are a great way to get more creative. And I know personally, when Andy was bringing up the thought of lyrics, you were very close to swaying me. Like, hey, I'm gonna join sides with you and we're gonna push hard. But then I started to realize, like, there is a whole post-rock world of people who love instrumental music. We just have to find them. We just have to kind of get our music out there further and we'll have our niche of fans. But it is hard. But we were able to create that soundscape without it. And I think I'm back to the camp of it's okay. The limitations help us, you know, stay creative. But I'm not sure where you're at on that.
When you say control, for me, like control is, I feel controlled. If I was not controlled, you know, it would be a lot more. Like I would be infinitely more expressive in my drumming. I'm just saying.
You were just talking about genre, and I've seen the music style of Fury and Solace being described as shoegaze. And I got to say that I don't hear that at all. What I do hear is a bit of prog rock, like what you found on At the Helm.
Yeah,
prog rock for sure.
Shoegaze because sometimes comes out in like a little bit of our softer songs, but like Our Lungs, in my opinion, might be a little bit on the shoegazy side because I'm using like a little bit of a bass effect and there's some of that extra like kind of washy sound. But shoegaze, I personally have kind of moved away from describing this as shoegaze because that's typically a genre with a lot more chorusy guitars and big reverbed vocals and, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we actually hit shoegaze much anymore. The genre stuff does kind of keep us in a controlled spot because we had one part of the song. So the song Our Lungs ends with a piano riff, if you remember, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, prior to that, we had a full band version of that riff. And it was almost entirely recorded. But we were like, this doesn't work. We can't do this because of our brand and the way that our vibe is really as a band. And it's kind of a shame, sort of, because, you know, you show it to some people and they're like, oh, that would have been really cool. And then you're like, you show it to other people and they're like, yeah, that doesn't make sense. You know, I'm glad you guys didn't do that. The piano works better. You know, so I think there's a little bit of that control. I would say it's more like a lid. We personally as a band don't want to go too far metal, you know, and we don't want to go too far jam band, you know, and we don't want to go too far soft. you know, take too long. Plus, we pride ourselves in switching parts enough to not like make people fall asleep. Like we want to have like an engaged experience with our music, I'd say.
Yeah.
And I think it's because we all like music so much. We want to get somewhere. We want to tell a story and not just kind of like do background music. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. You've sort of brought up this point. I can explain that. I really think that your band name, Fury and Solace, is a misnomer because the solace part fits because your sound is on the milder side, but there isn't much of the fury happening.
Oh, you don't think so?
Didn't say any, but I said there isn't much fury happening.
Not enough for your ears. Is that what you're saying? You want more?
I am a bit of a metalhead.
Okay. I was going to say now. I would argue that the perspective of the listener varies. So for the metalheads, probably not enough fury, but for just like the layman listener, they're like, wow, that's super hard.
We've had some comments of the hardest, we're like the hardest folk rock, post rock band they've heard.
Yeah. I mean, you would see the fury if you saw us live, buddy.
Maybe that is the key. Maybe it doesn't translate super well coming from an album. I'm not sure. We tried. Yeah, I will tell you this, Dave. I was the engineer for the record, and I did my best. I had a couple engineers. The dude who was going to mix and master our record, he was in my ear a lot. I got to talk to him, ask a lot of questions, but we definitely didn't record a lot of the heaviest parts the right way. And I wish we would have. We were just missing some extra elements of writing that could have been really helpful. So we got some of that feedback along the way, but we tried our best, and timing and coordination of it all. It was hard work, but I'm proud of what we came up with, but you're probably right. Yeah, the fury parts could be heavier and maybe stronger.
Isn't that true of every band? You always look back at what you've done and said, oh, why didn't I do that?
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm never satisfied with my drumming, ever.
That's funny.
Then why don't you tell me about how the songs come together? What's the process like?
That is a great question, man. It's like puzzle building for us. It's my favorite thing to talk about.
Truly.
It truly is. But I'll let you go first.
Oh, really?
And from your perspective, how do you feel like songs show up to Fury and Solace?
How do we get them together? Up, man, oh, man. Well, you know, somebody brings either a concept or a structure of chordage, and you know, that's the thing. I don't necessarily call them riffs,
yeah,
because like I've got other projects where they're super riff heavy, and
yes,
that's right. But I think Jeremiah, Bevan, they create that super atmospheric chordage and concept. Adam brings the bass to it, like trying to explore with different chords
and different lines. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about
the part. I do that a lot.
I'm thinking about the part in Vessel or Tomb where I drop and he's got that tap thing going. Yeah. It's like a triplet feel. But you brought the chordage under there that makes it so nasty and intense. Like I did not expect you to bring that chord, but you were exploring with all the different notes. Like, how can we make this?
Yeah. I think it's by endurance.
It's by endurance.
Are you talking about towards the ending or are you talking about, I brought that front.
No, I'm not talking about
which one you run.
I'm talking about after that, drop and Bevan keeps going.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I wrote that.
And
yeah.
You wrote the chord.
Oh, and then the chord. I got that drop. That's right.
Super.
And they're really dark.
Yeah.
Left hand going like crazy. But anyway, all I'm saying is I brought that part up to say you bring like the different chordage ideas on top of theirs.
I mean, like I bring the rhythm and stuff, and they refine my rhythms when I bring the ideas. We'll record something and I'll take it home and ponder on it and play on my steering wheel. I got an electric drum set. You saw Electric Avenue. And I'll put it on the electric drums and mess with it. But then I consider myself the transition guy. Me and Adam really work together on the transition from part to part. We don't like busting straight riff to riff, but we bring in the syncopations a lot of the time.
He and I kind of challenge each other a lot on that because he challenges me. Andy's much more classically trained than I am. So he like brings up a lot of different time signatures, which is super helpful. And then I'll kind of refine those. I'll bring him back to earth a little bit towards the post-rock, you know, kind of kind of pathway. And then between Jeremiah and Bevan, what they've been doing atmospherically or whatever, we can kind of meld the ideas.
Yeah.
But they do start a lot with like prior writing. I will say right now, Bevan writes a lot on guitar. I write a lot on guitar, but I'll also write a lot on bass and bring those ideas in and try to kind of form things prior and show them off to Andy. Whenever I can get different time signatures, I always try to get them to Andy as quickly as I can. It's just fun. It's just fun.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of those, and we have a lot of things in the pipeline. But once we start jamming them, it's like a process of like, where do we want it to go? Mm-hmm. We can jam really fast. It's my favorite thing about our band. We can all get our instruments ready and someone can play a note and we will all just start.
Yes.
And we can play for 5 to 10 minutes on just that note starting, and we all get something moving. And it is really amazing to me. Like I'm just smiling just because it's so fun.
Well, you get things moving during the jam session. What you do is it keeps going because you guys have long songs.
We do. We do. That's true. Well,
like 7 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is kind of the post-rock thing. They are always almost long, but I think we pride ourselves in the fact that those 6 to 7 minutes are entertaining. Like there's a lot that goes on in those 6 to 7 minutes versus there are way too many post-rock bands, in my opinion, that lose my attention within 2 minutes because they haven't done anything new and they haven't taken me anywhere new. I'm not on a journey anymore. They're putting me to sleep, you know, little things like that. And I'm not trying to like down poo-poo on the genre. It's more of like a feeling of like, it just doesn't do it for me. And that's why I'm in this band.
Well, I think that's because you have a metal background. That's my opinion.
Maybe. Different styles of music that I played in. Yeah.
Talking about new and different, I need you guys to give an explanation about the closing song, Never For Us, The Lowered Banner. In the last few seconds, if you turn the volume way, way up, you hear a songbird.
Oh, yeah.
So I used my Merlin Bird app to find out that it's a red-eyed vireo.
No way.
Why did you include that?
We didn't know that.
Now you do.
We did not know that. That's so funny. My grandpa was a bird watcher.
Really?
Yeah, an avid bird watcher. He led walks and did all sorts of stuff. Now, where do they originate from?
Do you know? Actually, they live probably right around where you guys are, Southern Ontario. They cover quite a large section of North America. I think they winter in the Amazon.
Huh. That is amazing.
So it has nothing to do with where Shackleton was.
No, it doesn't.
No red-eyed vireos down there.
What I understood was that it was literally just ending the album in peace. And like, what is more peaceful than just being out in the middle of nature, hearing the trees, hearing the birds? That's what it was for me.
Oh, you guys have never heard a pileated woodpecker. They would wake the dead.
Yeah, those probably will annoy you to no end, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's getting way off topic.
No. That's so funny. And I embarrassingly placed those there. So that is maybe one of maybe two sound bites that we got from a free source. And I'm trying to remember if it was a YouTube free source or a free source from audio. It's something. I can't remember the name of it. I was planning to actually go outside and get the birds.
In your area.
And I didn't. And I feel like a goober. But those are left on the record like that. And it ended up getting put down in the mix pretty far. But and then the tape closes. That was the thing at the end that we put on. And some people were kind of like, why didn't you start the record with a tape? Well, because the story has been going since the first record. And when the tape closes, it's a pause.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that's. So there's more to come. That was our ..
Well, when I air that song on The Antidote, I'm going to up the volume way up so everybody can hear the bird.
Are you going to play it all the way through?
I'm going to try to squeeze the whole thing in.
That's amazing. That wouldn't be our direct choice, but you do you, man. I'm glad. Yeah. I like the noise. And we were happy that what we came up with, but in my personal opinion, after all of the mumbo jumbo trying to squeeze things in for record and vinyls,
yeah,
I'm mad about it now. Because it feels like old school or most post-rock bands where they just do lots of noise, but we don't do a lot of that. One song, that's really the noisiest one we have.
Well, you know something, I think Fury and Solace has put yourselves into a tough spot, because how are you ever going to top this release?
Oh my gosh, that's a good question. But
I feel, dude.
Do you feel like it's our best? Between the two, it's better than the first, for sure.
It's better than the first, in my opinion.
I think the more we write together, the more they'll get better.
Yeah, we've not really dug into new material thus far.
We kind of made a rule.
We wanted to live on this album for a minute before we approached a third.
Well, and truthfully, we're still getting good at it. It's hard.
It's a hard record.
There's a lot of really detailed things.
Yeah, there is.
That are hard to play live, and we're getting better and better at it. But it's hard.
I don't know how to answer that other than we'll see. We'll see. I have no expectations. Yeah. I have no predictions. But I'm confident in the musicianship that we have.
Yeah.
Bevan, Adam, these dudes are just endless with ideas. So I don't know what they're going to, bring to me. I certainly don't have like a say in riffs or anything. I'm nowhere near a guitarist.
You help us shape a lot of things. Andy likes to do this behind the drum set a lot.
Conductor.
He likes to conduct. I'm throwing my hands around like a conductor. And he will find himself not playing the drums, but just enjoying what we have somehow melded together between Jeremiah and Bevan and I. And it's fun to see you do that, because it makes me feel like we've entertained you, and you're often the litmus test. Yeah, for me. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because I want to make sure you, as a non-post-rock listener, is actually enjoying yourself.
That makes sense.
Because I think we've always had, tons of family and friends who will like humor us by listening to our music, how many of them actually like it, and I think that's another testament to our style where we can kind of apply to a lot of people. Whereas most post-rock listeners are kind of like in that kind of niche network a little bit, whereas we can like apply to everybody, a little bit more. But I hope we can do a better record, or at least meet the standard. Nate Washburn down in Atlanta from Glow in the Dark Studios did a phenomenal job on that, on the mix, and just got it perfect for us. So,
yeah, shout out to Nate, man.
It certainly works for me. The Antidote has been here with the A-Team, Andrew and Adam.
The A-Team.
Whoa.
Of Fury and Solace.
That's right.
Thanks so much for coming for this talk.
Yeah, sure thing, Dave. Thanks for having us, man.
Thank you. Yeah.